Hey, this is Mike from the High Hash Rate Podcast. Before we get started, I just want to do a brief shout out to a partnership of ours, the Freedom Festival 2024 in the heart of New England on May 4th. Participate in a unique celebration where the pursuit of freedom, health, and community values come together through engaging activities and inspiring experiences. Immerse yourself in all things Bitcoin. That's right, including Bitcoin speakers, Bitcoin music, Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast Barbecue, Bitcoin workshops, and etc. Participate in interactive demonstrations like parkour, cold plunge, wow, that sounds fun, hot tub, a soccer contest, and a raffle with prizes. Buy your tickets today. You can enter our affiliate link, HighRate20, for a 20% discount. You could also visit, for more information, massadoption.net. Anyway, on to our show.
Screw it. Here we go.
I don't like the term orange pill. It's corny, and it's just like, it's not, no one orange pilled me. You know, I was lucky enough to have a couple of people that were in the bit that knew something about Bitcoin that talked to me and answered my questions and that pointed me in the right directions. But I did it myself. It's about creating positive touch points for people.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Wait, Dan, tell the audience what you were doing right before we arrived here.
Oh, I was late.
Why are you late?
Yeah, I was late to the recording or whatever, to the software, because I was making a Trailer Park Boys Bitcoin meme. It's the video where Randy's out, like he's like pumping up the air pump, like he's like pumping a tire on his bike, and it's like really slow, and he's got his big guts out, he's not wearing a shirt, and it's just like Bitcoin is pumping, and then like Barb's in the background, and she's like pulling her shirt to the side, like she's getting hot watching him pump. But that's me. I put me on the caption. But yeah, I mean, that's that. 20 people out there will get that one, but check it out.
Trailer Park Boys. Think of it. High Hash Rate and Trailer Park Boys. It's a match made in heaven.
I've watched that show so many times through, like, at least 10.
Yeah, me too.
You know, like, what? I haven't even seen this show, and I understand what you're saying, Boomer.
How do you?
I grew up near those guys.
Where did you grow up?
Nova Scotia
as well. So I'm
okay. So you have the accent. You do have the accent.
Yeah,
not that far. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not.
Threw you off, Randy.
Yeah.
Did you have aspirations to go to the Dartmouth Regional Vocational Center?
I have been to Dartmouth many, many times.
That's crazy. Have you like been out to see where they filmed that?
No, but I know exactly where they changed, right? Like they switched up. Like it used to be in Dartmouth, and then they moved it to Truro.
So like I got friends in both of those places.
I was exceptionally stoned for our first episode, or something is different, because like I did not notice your thick like Nova Scotia accent.
It's not that thick.
Like a lot of people.
Sure.
When I tell them I'm from Nova Scotia, then they like, oh, now I hear it. But
yeah,
they don't.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I just heard it.
Because I grew up
French,
right?
Like I grew up in a French community, so like and there's not
that's right.
many. So I spoke French quite a bit. So I kind of got a hybrid French, Acadian / Nova Scotian accent.
It's been so long. That makes me curious. What's the difference, the big difference of a French Canadian to a French?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, most of the French people in Canada are from Quebec. And they were ancestors of settlers that came from France in the 1700s, right? I guess my ancestors are as well too, but they never settled in Quebec. They settled in Nova Scotia. So my ancestors became the Acadians. So you guys have heard like in Louisiana, the Cajun.
Yeah, of course. I was going to bring those up.
That's me.
Louisiana French.
Yeah, that's what I am. Like those were people that were from the East Coast of Canada that when England and France declared war on each other, the British went in there and picked all my ancestors up and shipped them off to Louisiana. And, you know, my great, 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 great grandfather, he hid in the mountains or wherever. He managed to get away. And then when the English left,
he went about his business.
So there's different pockets of French within Canada.
What's maybe we covered this last time,
but remind us, why is it that the French Canadians are just so, they're like the American South. They're always like, we're breaking away. We're conceding. Screw this. We're not listening. Like, we're doing our own thing.
Well, it's culturally quite different. Like, when I live in Quebec. Like, I actually live in Quebec, but I live right on the border with Ontario. People watch the different type of TV. People listen to the different types of music. It's just a different culture. And it goes back to years and years and years. And there's some ways that the French have it pretty good in Canada in some ways. Like, we give, everything has to be bilingual, even though, what, like 10% of Canadians actually speak French. But traditionally speaking, like, we were a part of the British Commonwealth, and we still are a part of the British Commonwealth, and the king and the queen in England had say in Canada. But if you were from Quebec and your ancestors were from France, you're like, fuck this. Why should I listen to the fucking king of England? Like, right. So there's a lot of that. And then just regional stuff, and then even sports stuff, you know, like the Montreal Canadiens feuding with the Toronto Maple Leafs, like that. shit like that.
Can you imagine, like, I'm trying to think, like, Texas, like, we start to say, like, you got to listen to Trudeau now, like the everybody else in the United States, like, they follow one, and it's like, or, you know, Texas, you got to follow Trudeau, like, they'd freak out. So I guess maybe that's kind of like Quebec is well, kind of a, that's a terrible fucking analogy, but.
Well, it's even more different. I would argue, like Quebec to, not Quebec, let's say, with Texas to California.
Yeah, there you go.
Texas and California have more in common historically, I would say, than Quebec. Sure. And
they speak the same
Alberta.
Language, first of all.
Yeah, they speak the same language. Quebec and Alberta have almost nothing in common other than they're Canadian and they like hockey and they drink Molson. Labatt's Blue.
It seems like everybody, or like, well, not everybody, but like, there's just a lot of countries, especially the United States. The United States is on the brink of some sort of civil conflict, national divorce. I don't know, maybe civil war. The memes are heating up, so the memes kind of precede the action. But in the past, Quebec's been kind of had these like independence runs. Is that heating up now? Is Canada in the situation where, you know?
It is, ironically, but not with Quebec. It's Alberta.
It's west,
It's west. They're the more conservative, more like the energy industry is strong, and we have a government that's more climate focused, more social focused.
Do you think that dynamic changes when or if the prime minister or the parliament's not run by French Canadians?
It just so happens that the last few liberal prime ministers have been from Quebec. And the one before Trudeau, like we had a guy from Alberta before Trudeau, but then the guy before that was from Quebec, and he was quite popular. Like Chrétien was prime minister for like 12 years, and he was relatively well liked. I mean, there are always people that didn't like him, but you know, he was in the seat for a long, long time. And while he was in charge, Quebec wanted to separate, and we had relatively good relationship with the West.
The leading candidate against him, he's from Quebec as well?
No, he's got a French name, but he's from Alberta. He might be originally from Quebec, but he grew up in Alberta. But he speaks French really well. He represents a riding in not too far from where I live now, but that's not where he grew up.
The guy before Trudeau, at least from what I see in the media or just like online, doesn't, like, he's even to this day still not like very popular. And I was almost like, yeah, Trudeau, we don't like Trudeau, but Stephen Harper, you want to go back to that? What was it about Stephen Harper that was just like, so nobody really has like I've never heard anybody speak of him fondly. Like, I wish we could go back to the Stephen Harper days.
I mean, to be honest, I thought Harper did a good job. I lean a little bit more conservative. I lean a little bit more probably more libertarian than conservative, to be honest. But so I thought that Harper did a damn good job. He walked around and he looked prime ministerial, you know, like he would go to like the G7 meetings and the G12 meetings, and he's about 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", bigger dude. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm glad that, you know, relatively young, like he was in his mid 40s or, you know, late 40s. He looked the part. But he was, I wouldn't say authoritarian, but he cut some things in government and he didn't put up with a whole lot of shit. So of course the media kind of took him down. And when you control the media, you control everything.
Sticking on the Canadian, what's going on up there. How is the Canadian Bitcoin scene since we last talked to you? How's the Ottawa meetup?
It's good. Yeah, we were talking, Mike and I were talking about this a little bit before you came on, like off camera.
Yeah, it's going good. Going good. Peter McCormick was in town a couple of weeks ago, so we had like an impromptu,
Kind of meetup there. Had a good turnout, 30, 40 people showing up at a bar. It was good, but it should probably start picking up an interest, especially after this week.
How's the... I mean, you guys hit 58K quite a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys have hit like all time highs, right? Like you're.
Yeah, today.
Like,
today.
Yeah. Okay. So, what's the mood? How's the mood? How are you feeling? Is it hard to concentrate at work? Is everybody like, oh, shit, Boomer's right?
No. I don't know about you guys, man, but I'm not built for bull markets. I'm a bear market type of guy. Like I like the grind. I like the grind. I like the state, you know, just stack sats. I like the. I don't know if it's torture, but like
I'm not down with this euphoria of all-time highs, prices going to the world. It's a distraction in a lot of ways.
You're the dude that likes the like waking up at five, the process, the waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, going to the gym, being like tired and doing deadlifts, and who's gonna carry the boats like David Goggins?
No,
like I'm a routine guy, and it's better to be in a routine in a bear market than in a bull market.
There's for just sure. so much. Deep, there's
it's
a
easier
lot of
to
noise.
Stay focused, right?
Easier
like
to stay focused.
You don't have the distractions.
Yeah.
What happens in the bull markets? What are you dealing with? Like you just like is it screw up your routine, screw up your productivity. You're just getting all hype.
Have we even hit the bull market yet? I don't know.
I think honestly, today was the first day. I mean, I don't know when you guys are releasing this, and I don't know when you know whoever's listening to this is going to listen to it. But today is February 28th. And today was the day that
we had a
10K candle today, I think.
Some would call it the God.
We had a 5K candle, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, it's a 2-day 10% rise plus, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So honestly, today is like, today really feels like the first day of the bull market. Up until this point.
I'll give you that.
And even now, like, did you guys get any, we were talking about meetups before. I'm still not getting many people, newcomers at my meetups.
A handful
and
there.
When you go to sleep at 56 and you wake up at 61, you're feeling something. You're definitely in the bull market. Like that's definitely the feeling for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, you mentioned the meetups thing. My dad has just gotten super orange pilled in like probably the past few months. Like he bought some in 2020. A little bit, like he was kind of late. He didn't listen to me. I don't think he bought until 2021, but he told me he was going to in 2020. And then he bought a bunch of GBTC and he was getting screwed over on that one. But he held on to it until it, and he sold it recently and moved it to another ETF, which, yeah, I told him to buy the spot, but I guess it's in his Roth IRA. So he's like, he's doing MicroStrategy and the miners. He's like full degen mode. He's having a blast. He's sending me memes. He's sending me articles like every day. He's sending me every time the price goes up 1,000, I get a text from my dad, 58, 59, 60, 61, almost 64. Let's go. And then he'll send me fun articles and just like make fun of it. But I was telling Mike about this and my dad, God bless him. He loves Trump, man. He's a MAGA guy. Just like the full, like kind of like the rural Michigan, like old, like we're blue collar, like Trump supporter. And so I started kind of explaining Bitcoin to him. And like when he would send me FUD articles that he was like actually worried about when he was at the time, I would just kind of dismiss him the way I imagine like an orange pilled Donald Trump would. And I tell you, dude, it worked. My dad has like just, full up, all in, like sell. He's like, I sold everything in my IRA. I sold everything in my 401k. It's all in MicroStrategy.
To the moon.
The Bitcoin ETF, yeah. And he's like, I stack sats. I got my self-custody for my non-retirement. I'm like, damn, Dad, hell yeah, it finally worked. All it took was a few Trump impressions.
Can you imagine an orange-pilled Trump?
I don't. I mean, it's, he's perfect for him, and he's like the orange president, the orange pilled president. Like it's, I can't think of.
I mean, that's a crazy sort of thread there, just because you can.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's that unrealistic because he softened up to it. He said in his own way, you know, some nicer, he had nicer language about it the other night on CNN when they asked him about it. He said he doesn't have a problem with it anymore. He used to be really against it, but I think it's because he's got Vivek, in his like keeping him close by and his like advisors. Like maybe he'll mm-hmm. make him his vice president. And Vivek's probably in his ear. He's probably telling him, he's like, dude, this is, you got to jump on the Bitcoin wagon. So he might get more progressively orange pilled as the, especially as they're trying to like, you know, take, sue him for all of his net worth, you know, seize all of his New York properties and mm-hmm. real estate. What fixes this problem? Liquidate that shit into Bitcoin. They can't do shit about it.
And he goes up to and just looks in the mic. He's like, have fun staying poor.
I know, right?
It's like, oh, just, could can you imagine if he came out with some sort of Bitcoin statement that was like, I own Bitcoin. All right.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, think about the FUD, like when Wall Street Journal or like these articles, they post this FUD and Donald Trump, he already hates the fake news, right? He starts seeing Bitcoin FUD. He's just calling it all fake news. Like the whole country's, this is fake news. They're saying that it's bad for the climate. It's fake news. It'd be huge for
hell
lightning the price go up.
Like we're not that far from it, right? Like if this bull market really catches on
and
the money they use or the money the candidate uses might be the dividing factor at some point.
RFK is accepting it, yeah.
It's only a matter of time, guys. Only a matter of time. We always knew
it's only a matter of time. Like it might not be this cycle, but it'll be the next one, right?
Think of the last few years, the insanity, just like the clown world that we've lived through. Donald Trump all of a sudden becoming like the biggest advocate for Bitcoin is not even in the top 10 of the weirdest things that have happened. And it, at this point, it almost seems inevitable. the admiral of the Navy or whatever for the Department of Health is an old dude in a skirt. It's like, and they do this every day.
Yo, how fucking stupid do we look as a country, man?
Well, you guys look, sure, you guys look stupid, but we look stupid too, and Europe looks probably even stupider than all of us.
Yeah, but not everybody's eyes are on
nuclear power plants.
I mean, we,
we're putting Jill and Mulvaney on beer cans, dude. Like, come on.
Yeah, that's pretty, yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
It's not hurting anybody in some way, right? You know, like,
yeah, right, right.
Shutting down nuclear, perfectly functioning nuclear power plants to
put sure.
solar panels in a country that doesn't have that much sun.
It's fucking insane.
That's fair. But I'm just saying,
they're putting windmills.
It looks pretty stupid. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Are you about to go into something, Dan? Because I do want to
go ahead.
Touch back on something.
Go ahead.
The thing I wanted to touch back on is your meetup, and the thing that came out to me the most, I would say, when we were offline talking, is this concept of a bunch of men, a bunch of dudes, meeting up and doing something, and that could be in a Bitcoin meetup, that can be in a jujitsu class, that could be a, you know, room full of surfers. I don't know, a fireman,
gay,
is a good example,
a gay orgy.
This
is a fairly broad statement you made. Just guys hanging out.
There's going to be like the gay Bitcoin or something.
There is, dude.
Oh man, I'm terrible.
That's your next project, Mike. Next podcast.
Okay. The gay Bitcoin.
Go back through history. History is filled with men getting together, meeting at pubs, talking stuff out.
Right.
And then, you know, it's not nefarious or anything like that, but that's how revolutions start.
Right.
With a bunch of guys sitting around talking.
Right. Like it starts with talking. And like Bitcoin meetups, very positive, very optimistic. It demonstrates the importance of having these kind of positive incentives, these positive goals to work forward to. Because when you have this inflation, you have civil conflict, people starving, running out of food, running out of energy, like in Europe. You start to get dudes hanging out, you know, on the border of the Red Sea, firing rockets at ships and shutting down shipping. And then you have war and you have just bloodshed. And it's kind of getting to this turning point where what is it going to be that kind of galvanizes the people and communities around the world, depending, like, as they're facing struggle and challenges in the next few years?
Well, I mean, the three of us probably think Bitcoin is a big part of this, right?
Right.
I mean, we wouldn't be talking here if we didn't believe that.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be necessarily Bitcoin. Just if everybody goes out and tries to do something good for the world. Yeah, and if we all did it, if we, a bunch of guys getting together, a jiu-jitsu class or an art class or Bitcoin meetup or whatever, and going around and not just talking, but actually starting to build things, building communities,
right?
Building businesses, teaching each other, helping each other, learning from each other.
And everybody, they focus. I mean, maybe this is just kind of my echo chamber, but you know, whether you're on social media or a lot of people are online all day, and it just seems like everybody's so focused on who they're going to vote for in the presidency, or who should be in charge of, you know,
or sports
international
ball.
Right. And it's, yeah, I guess you can get some kind of direction change if you change the president, but it really ultimately, the change needs to start first at yourself. You need to get, like you said, into a routine, go into the gym, enjoying that process of suffering to improve, right? To learn, to get better. And then that extends to your family, then extends to your jiu-jitsu class, your church, or like your community organization. And people are thinking so far away, but it's like, fix what's local, fix what's inside first. Yeah. And Bitcoin is part of that too.
One thing I'm feeling for sure is you, as a man, you have to remain strong in what's about to come. That's what I kind of see something coming, and we have to remain. Those who don't remain strong, I feel like are going to get sucked up into that flood, I guess. I don't know where.
No, I agree. Think about the movie Zombieland, I think it is, with he's always talking about, it's like, here are the rules of like surviving the zombie apocalypse. He's like, you have to have good cardio. You have to stay limber. He's always stretching, like getting ready. He's like, you have to keep yourself strong mentally and physically. You have to keep your, you know, financial health strong, your mental health strong, everything. Because you don't know. You know, you never
too many uncertainties are,
but it seems more like you're going to need those skills and that
help. Yep,
and a community that supports the same thing.
Yes,
right. Yeah, and you can't do it alone.
And I would say we're in it now.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we've been in it for a little while,
since at least 2020.
Since at least 2020, and maybe even a year or two before that.
Right.
And I mean, in a lot of places in the world, they've been in it for longer, a lot longer than that. You go to Nigeria and talk to some of the guys over there.
Right, of course.
Look what's going on in
Gaza right now, or, you know, wherever the place is. There's wars all over the place going on. It's coming to us if it's not here already. I think the mental side of it is already here
for us.
You're talking about preparing for the actual physical, the kinetic.
Well, yeah, and it's not everywhere. It's like the kinetic, the wars, the conflict, the struggle is, it's not evenly distributed. Like you already mentioned, Ukraine, Gaza, the Middle East, Africa, there's different places that it's going to be a lot worse. We're probably going to be spared of the worst of it. At least I hope so. Although the way things look, you know, it also depends on where you're at in North America.
You go to a downtown city anywhere in North America right now.
Right.
Like, you know, like I live in a well-to-do city, and there are spots in this city that I won't go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Even during the day. Right. And that was not the case even 3 years ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a big influence on that is inflation, economic desperation, substance abuse, lack of housing, housing prices in Canada are insane.
Yeah. Mental health, like poor mental health coming, you know, that has been influenced because of inflation or job losses or substance abuse, all that stuff. It definitely compounds on.
But
we got to do stuff like this, man. Like that's what we got to do. Sure. We got to build communities like in real life, but also virtually as well too, you know, find your tribe.
Speaking of which, we kind of joked about it for a second earlier about, as crazy as things are in the United States, it's like Canada and Europe has its own level of crazy. And honestly, looking at some of the news headlines, it seems like Canada has been a little bit ahead of us, almost like the inflation and the price. They're already at all-time highs for Bitcoins. It's kind of like a harbinger of everything else in the country, like housing prices. But I wonder at a certain point that has to peak. The clown world just peaks, right? And then people like what we're talking about, your meetups, like people in Canada start to realize, see the problem, realize that we have to take personal responsibility. We have to take responsibility to come together and fix it. Not necessarily violently, but like you had the trucker protest. You have people changing things in politics, changing things in their communities. Do you see that turning around right now in Canada?
Yes.
Do you think you've peaked
well, I,
and
I
now you're going
everywhere.
Right way?
I see it a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we got a long way to go. Like even talking about this week, the Google AI that came out where it was, show me a picture of the founding fathers and it's like two black dudes and like some lady who looks like she was born in India. It's like, these are the founding fathers of America.
Stone cat,
It doesn't make any sense, right? Like I think that people are starting to realize this stuff is just getting a little insane.
Sure.
The lady, she was an NCAA swimmer, Riley.
Leah Thomas. Oh, Riley Gaines.
No, Riley Gaines, yeah. She's going around saying, like, look, like I'm an athlete. I just don't want to compete with guys. And that's all. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm a female athlete. I'm an NCAA swimmer. I don't think I should be competing with that guy who's 6'5", 200 pounds.
Right.
That's starting to catch on. Even the most liberally minded people, and Canada is more socially left than the U.S., so that's why we're further along in clown world. But even these people, these progressive, and I hate the word progressive, but these progressive quotation marks people, they're starting to catch on. This shit doesn't make much sense.
Right. Yeah, there's a split there. People are starting
But there's a cognitive dissonance as well, too, right? Because then you start going down that... If you start going down that line, it'd be like, oh, what else have I been wrong about? What else should I be thinking about? What else have... And then you block yourself off.
Yeah, I think that there's it's coming to a point where, like you mentioned, the Google AI... And this, you know, for the past year or so, AI has been kind of sold to the public as this revolutionary technology that's going to solve a lot of problems, going to like usher everybody into like this new era of productivity and just growth and how important it was going to be to everybody's everyday lives. And then all it's done, you know, AI or Google being the worst example, but just get more retarded and woke and just like untrustworthy and like just detached from really what reality is. And what we can see with our eyes. And the same thing's happening in the media, in the news, for multiple different reasons and different incentives, but coming from the government, everything they put out there is progressively dumber and dumber. So
people are tuning out. You talk about the news. Like nobody's watching the news anymore.
Right. And my point is like people will kind of go along with it if they think everybody else is going along with it, because it's like that's kind of how you fit in and how things work. You just don't go against the grain. But at a certain point, the information becomes unreliable. You stop being able to make the right choices, good decisions, and be able to trust the information that to help you make, you know, just everyday decisions in your life. And when that stops being valuable, when it starts getting to the point where it might be dangerous for you to listen to their information, it might cause you harm if you take what they say as truth. That's when you have really tuned it out. You know what I mean? Like that's when it's like people just stop going along with it, and they're like, I cannot use this information in my daily life. It will cost me. I have to tune this out. We have to change it.
Yeah. And you mentioned inflation and the homelessness. People are realizing they go to the grocery store and like, wait, $100 doesn't get me two bags of groceries anymore. And if I walk to the grocery store, I might trip on, you know, I might step on somebody's needle and there'll be four or five homeless guys in a tent.
Right. Exactly.
In a neighborhood, in a park that, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago was, you know, kids were playing in there and now I can't go there because a bunch of people live there.
Right. And there's only so much
messaging that the media can give us that everything is okay.
Right.
Until people start looking around and be like, wait a minute, things are not okay.
It's not the same amount of legitimacy and authority and trust is not, again, equally distributed. we've kind of expected and know that politicians are going to lie to us. We've expected and know that most of the mainstream media is, you know, it's paid for by advertising. They're going to give us this weird version of the truth. But then you get to there's certain parts of the bureaucracy, like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or, you know, the guys, the people who put out the CPI numbers. They're saying that, you know, there used to be just a different level of trust with them. It was like, you can't fudge the numbers, you can't fudge science. But they're saying, like, inflation's coming down. Inflation's this percent. And like you said, people are going to the grocery store every day and they're seeing their grocery bill go up. They're passing the gas station, the petrol station, and they're seeing price go up. They're seeing housing go up. They're seeing the homelessness go up. And it's like, there's no institution. The universities, they're kicking out the presidents for plagiarism. There's just no institution that has any trust anymore. And people are, they just don't know what to do. They're having to come to a new consensus that is a little bit more driven from what they can know through their own experiences.
And it seems like it's
populism, right? And it's going to be political first.
That's where it can be dangerous.
And exactly, that's where it can be dangerous. And I don't think that's the right way to go. Like, the money's broken, guys. It's all broken money. But people don't want to admit that. People want to look to the next politician, in your case, the last politician, and say, oh, this guy can fix it.
You know?
Right. And
it seems lazy, right? Like, it's just.
Yeah. When people can't find good information, good news, good explanations, or injustice, right? Like, that's when conspiracy theories start to really spin wild. And it used to be kind of like, conspiracy theories were just kind of fun. Some of them were crazy, stupid, but they were just fun to mess around with. But it's like, there's a conspiracy theory for everything. And it's because there is no good, we're getting so much fake information, so much bullshit information. Like, are there any good, I mean, we know the national and global conspiracies, but are there any good, like, local or more local Canadian conspiracy theories that you'd like?
Dude, man, the conspiracy theories, man.
Anybody that knows me that's listening to this right now is like, oh my God, he's going to go nuts. He's going to, like,
talk
about Antarctica or the moon or whatever. Like, no, I don't trust anything. I don't trust anything anymore. And that's really sad. That's really sad.
Right.
And I've always been the type of kid, like, even growing up, like, I was like an X-Files kid, Star Trek type guy. You know, I love that
shit.
Like, I never trusted anybody ever. Like, I've never been good with authority my entire life. Probably, you know, the classical traits in a Bitcoin, right?
Right.
And now since the pandemic, it's on another level. Like, I literally don't trust anything. And it's not a good way to live. I don't like this. I don't like living like this. Like, I want to be able to trust. Trusting people is good.
Right. You need an element of it to have a high functioning society. Yeah. I mean, think about how the lack of self-awareness, because they get really mad. You know, it used to be like CNN would get really mad about Joe Rogan. And now it's to the point where, like, the Associated Press, you know, tomorrow we could wake up and they could be upset that people believe there's an ice wall that prevents you from going to Antarctica. And it's like the lack of self-awareness to realize that the story of an ice wall preventing people from going to Antarctica is more believable than anything the Associated Press publishes. It's like, that's a credibility problem. That's on you. Like, if you don't have a better explanation, you can't figure out a way to provide evidence that people will believe on a daily basis.
We caught them in their lies.
Right.
We flat out caught them over the pandemic. And it honestly started before the pandemic. It really started with the internet, where we could now start, we could do our own research. We could look at things our own selves and talk amongst each other. And we didn't have to listen to some centralized apparatus telling us what was true or not. And then over the pandemic, we had more time on our hands.
We were sitting at home, we were watching Netflix, and we just started going down those rabbit holes, right? And now we don't trust them anymore because we caught them.
What do you think the catalyst is for change? Do you think it's like one big event? Do you think that it's somewhere on the near? I mean, we've kind of said that we feel something's coming, where we feel something's already started. But if you've ever read The Fourth Turning, right? Like, it kind of talks about this time period being that rough time when the fourth turning occurs.
Yeah.
Do you think, what do you think about that process? Like a long drawn out process, something quick and kinetic, World War III type event, or what do you see?
World War I's never
right
settled. So we're still in World War I as far as I'm concerned. But traditionally it has been war over these periods when times have changed, fourth turning events have been large conflict. I guess that's the base case. I mean, and especially when you're seeing what's going on in the Middle East and in Europe, and in China as well, like China and Taiwan. That's, I hope not. I don't want nuclear war.
But right.
It does seem like there's a lot of people in the world that, to them, they think that's the answer. I mean, we're a part of a peaceful revolution, right?
Right.
We're a part of something that we think that if we, the Bitcoin thing can catch on, we think that we can actually make meaningful change. Right. And maybe this is the peaceful revolution. Maybe we can avoid a third world war if we hyper Bitcoinize fast enough.
Or, I mean, is that even, I mean, it's a nice thing to say, but is that even possible? Could you go from the, so I live in the Midwest.
It's not going to be pretty.
Because I live in the Midwest, right? And when it's where the cold fronts and the cold air comes down from Canada and it meets the warm air that comes up from the Gulf of Mexico. And that, they're just, the pressure is different. The moisture is different. Just everything, the temperature is just this vast difference. And when those collide, I live in Tornado Alley. It just creates these massive, some of the worst and most impressive severe thunderstorms in the world. And that's kind of like fiat and Bitcoin colliding, and one takes over the other, like one front overpowers the other. And it seems like the only, in terms of like being faithful to the laws of physics, is the only way is to be extremely chaotic, volatile, and potentially violent.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I agree. Right. I would hope that it would be short.
Cycles speeding up, yeah.
Yeah, cycles are speeding up. Rip the Band-Aid off type of thing. Accelerationist, you know, like the acceleration crew. Like, I get it. Like, I absolutely get it. And maybe that is the best way.
Right. Rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah.
Rip the Band-Aid off and let's go through something that's going to be damn ugly, especially for the boomer generation, like our parents, parents' generation. Like, that's going to suck for them. And it's probably going to suck for us as well, too. But maybe by the time we're older, maybe people our generation, we can be the leaders of something.
Yeah, that leads me to what I was going to, that's a great segue. That leads me to what I was going to say. You're a boomer, or excuse me, you're not a boomer, you're a millennial, right?
I'm like right on the line of millennial and X.
Okay. So yeah, same here. So, you know, according to the, you know, like the fourth turning cycle, like theory, the millennials are kind of expected to be the hero generation, ones that rise up like the GI generation did in World War II. And so that's on us, right? We're already talking about like being mentally and physically prepared. Exactly. But I think if you look at the kind of the stereotypes of millennials, as we were growing up, right, where they call us the safe space generation and the participation trophy award winners, right? Like we're always being sheltered and our lives being nerfed, at least as like a generational collective. And it's, you mentioned, right, like we want it to be quick. We want this transition to be quick and easy, but it might suck. And maybe like that's our hero's journey as millennials, is to accept that life's not always going to be safe and fun and like cool vibes, right? We got to all be ready to kind of take personal responsibility and embrace the pain, embrace the suck, and go through it. Do what we have to do to kind of come out the other side stronger.
Yeah.
The process, yeah. Like what you talked about.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be all of us. I mean, we're all going to have to go through it in our own way, but not everybody's going to be the leader. Not everybody's going to be on the vanguard of all this stuff. Like I like to think that our community, our Bitcoin community, I think we are, you know, I'm not saying that all of us are, you know, 80 IQ, right? But at least there's an integrity in the community, right? that I think that in general we're leaders in more than followers, and maybe we can
lead some peaceful right. revolution.
You know, and if you think back, at least my great grandparents, they used to mention during the Great Depression, right? Like how they would scrimp and save to get through the Great Depression, and like the meals that they'd get creative to make to stay fed during the Great Depression. And it almost seems like we're preparing for that in this, like, sell your chairs. If you don't have holes in your socks and underwear, like, you're not a Bitcoiner. If you didn't sell your car, you're not like walking to work, you're short Bitcoin. It's like we're putting ourselves through like this scarcity and like being able to be stoic about it.
Yeah.
For a better cause, for something better in the future.
It's not all about
right.
it. It's not exactly. in the Bitcoin community for sure, but you look outside, like there's a lot of people that are still living YOLO. You know, they're panic spending like crazy. But
right. Yeah.
It's gonna suck for them, I think, more than us.
But then that leads, now this isn't my base case, and I'm a much more bullish person than this, but what if we don't get to that hyper Bitcoin? What if we personally don't live
I'm
long,
I'm
like hyper Bitcoinization is too far down the line.
I'm prepared
right
for it.
So we're doing it anyway.
I have absolutely,
it's a sacrifice you're
I would 1,000%
100 times out of 100 do what I have to do to make sure humanity strive just prospers after me than to have a yacht and a Lamborghini
in the next 10 years.
Right. And you said it at the beginning that you don't really like the bull market, you're a bear market guy.
Not
right?
for
and
me.
I,
I'm a bear market guy.
I would not have said that because it's not an intuitive thing to think. But after having this conversation, now I'm thinking, oh, I'm the same way. When I am going through that struggle, waking up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym and just like that, I actually am getting enjoyment out of that. I'm like, I'm up before everybody else. I'm putting myself through the bullshit. This is like my fun. And then I get, you know, it gets to summer and I go on vacation or I get a week off or I get PTO or just something comes up where I'm supposed to just enjoy it all, spend my money that I've been saving, that I've been, holding off from being a consumer. I have all this built up energy and time and value and rewards that I can spend. And I don't really enjoy that. I'm like, I don't want to lay out in the sun and relax. Like I want to go back to the grind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Stay strong, my man. Stay strong.
So yeah,
there's going to be more bear markets, right? Like this is
right. For some, the bear markets are too long. For some, too short.
Yeah, some too short.
Like I 1,000% could have done with 20K for a while, and just sharpen my sword, build my character, build my community, grow my bag.
Lots of things.
It's easy to hold. It's easy. Well, for some people, I guess not for everybody. It's easy to hold when it's going up and you're like, I'm right. We're right. It's much harder when it's dipping and it keeps dipping and it keeps dipping. And it, oh my God, it actually went below the previous cycle.
So much easier for me. So much easier for me when it goes down. So much easier when it goes down.
I feel like you deserve it.
So much. Yeah.
Right. That's crazy. Yeah, I used to think that people who would, I thought there were LARPs like talking about, I wish the price would dip so I could buy more. I want the price to keep dipping. But now the more I think about it, it's like, no, like that is the, everybody gets on and posts, oh, here we go, another leg down. It's almost like excitement.
There's just too many things that can go wrong in a bull market,
you know?
Right. Yeah, you're constantly stressed.
You're constantly thinking, why don't I have
the
more?
The dip's coming.
Yeah.
Or yeah,
why didn't I buy more? Why didn't I buy more?
I'm never going to be able to buy under this price again.
Right. Like I do a every 2 weeks, I do a dollar cost average. Just a DCA, I get paid every 2 weeks. I get paid on a Tuesday. I deposit my money on a Tuesday. I usually make my purchases on a Wednesday morning. So today was my purchase date. I'm like, my God. Fuck's sakes! I have to buy now when it's ripping like crazy. Like I just got like a lot fewer sacks. The UTXO I made this morning was like the smallest DCA UTXO I think I've ever done.
That's nuts.
Because I only got in and
okay.
It's like I got in right around the highs of last time, so I got in early 2021.
Okay. Yeah. So that was when you got in. I forgot if we talked about this. Did you kind of go through that phase where you're trying to like convince your friends to get in, and you were trying to like talk to your family and try to orange pill them, right? But back then, right, you just got to, looking back, we were all idiots, especially at the very beginning. Like the way that we would explain this to people, we couldn't even explain it. We're still learning how to understand Bitcoin and to explain it to ourselves, much less explain it to somebody else who has like no basis for even knowing where to begin. So
there was so much going on the past few years on top right. of it. Like, my God.
So from that perspective, right, people who are coming into this, presumably this bull market this year, there's going to be a lot of normies and retail people that are going to come in, and if they know you've got it, and obviously leading a meetup, you're going to have new people that eventually start showing up, and they're going to be coming to you. What is your approach now? How do you explain it to them? Do you have more patience? Did you try to like cram all the information in with that, what that you have their attention at the meetup? Like what, how do we go into this market, bull market, and stay sane and stay level-headed and help other people onto the boat when it's so easy to just so be FOMOing and euphoric and like, oh my God, I got to get on the lifeboat. How do you?
In some ways I have less patience.
Okay.
Like, the last meetup I hosted, there was a guy, it was his first time, and he had messaged me a couple of days previous, like, oh, I want to come. Like, I'm really curious about this Bitcoin thing. And I'm like, oh, that's good. Like, he's showing integrity, not integrity, he's showing curiosity in it. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. He shows up and you can tell right away, like, yeah, this guy, smart guy, I guess, I'm sure, but very much a fiat maxi.
Right, right.
Like, very but, much so.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people start that way.
Right.
A lot and of people start that way.
And he's talking about
like XRP and Ethereum. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, and this is like a Bitcoin only meetup. And like, we advertise pretty hard. It's like, this is no shit coins. No,
yeah.
You know, none of that stuff. And he's asking me about XRP. So what I do is I throw it back on him. You know, okay, explain to me what XRP is. Tell me what it is. Because nobody has been able to explain to me what Ethereum is, what XRP is, none of this shit. Like, I can explain to you what Bitcoin is.
Right.
Right? So why are you arguing with me and you can't even explain what your shitcoin is?
But I should have more patience with them. And I usually do have patience for some people.
But this guy, I wasn't that much of an asshole. But by my standards, I was a little bit of an asshole with him. But I think that it is a little bit of hard love.
Yeah.
You know, and he's still going to shitcoin. He's still going to I'm not,
right. That's the thing.
Talking to me for half an hour is not going to stop him
right.
from buying more XRP.
Right.
But maybe it'll be one more touch point. When he does get his hands burnt on the stove, he'll remember, oh, yeah, that guy with the beard that I met at the pub that was hosting that Bitcoin meetup. Maybe he was right all along.
Yeah, I think that during 2021 and 22, I probably had more of a attitude of just like getting maybe whether it's mad or putting people on the defensive or like it's Bitcoin only, not crypto, not shitcoins, like scolding them. I definitely had more of that attitude, but I think this time with a little bit more experience, it's not that I'm going to encourage it, but instead of like, no, this meetup is Bitcoin only and kind of like shouting them down, it's just kind of being a little bit more patient from the sense of, listen, if that's what you want to chase and pursue, I can't stop you, but we have an hour and Bitcoin is very important and there's so much information that we could not cram it all into 1 hour. We'll need as many hours as we have time for meetups for the years to come, and we still won't have completely unwrapped the onion, so we're going to focus on that. And if you want to be here, we'll focus on that. Do what you're going to do on your own time and hope that they can absorb as much information in that hour as you can give them that's quality.
Something that I've kind of taken over the past couple of years is that I don't like the term orange pill.
Sure.
It's kind of stupid. I think it's
I think it's corny the way we say it.
It's corny, and it's just like, it's not, no one orange pilled me. You know, I was lucky enough to have a couple of people that were in the bit that knew something about Bitcoin that talked to me and answered my questions and that pointed me in the right directions. But I did it myself. I've always believed.
Same.
It's about creating positive touch points for people, and you create positive touch points by for people by listening to them, and you hear where they're coming from, and where. Like I'm an economics guy. I'm an energy guy. That's a really good touch point for me. The sovereign money thing and the fiat food health thing, it's not bad. Like it certainly is like a touch point for me, but it's a much better touch point for other people. But by talking to people and they start talking about food, well, then you know, okay, this guy's really into food and nutrition. Well, maybe the touch point I can go with him is like, oh yeah, inflation. There's a reason why your food's shit.
Yeah, exactly.
All these companies have to pump in all these chemicals to keep the price down because they can, right?
Right. So
because we live in an inflationary world.
I hate the term orange pill as well, but I use it so much just because it's so common and everybody, when they hear that, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But, you know, you've probably heard us talk about this on the show before and you just mentioned it, right? We always say Bitcoin fixes this. So we, based on where you're most capable of educating and explaining and giving somebody a positive touch point is like energy and economics. So if you meet somebody who is really interested in Bitcoin's economic value, that's the perfect person to have a conversation. Yeah. That's why I liked Preston Pysh. He explained it to me in a way that I was listening to him to have, you know, to hear information about. And energy is another one. And you said food. It's some kind of term that explains, like, figuring out what somebody's the problems they see in the world and from what perspective, whether it's food, energy, like, you know, economics, inflation,
sovereignty, spirituality,
sovereignty, national events. Yeah. Like in kind of focusing on, instead of trying to explain how it fixes the whole world, which sounds stupid when you first hear that, especially when you have no idea what Bitcoin really is, but narrowing it down to how it fixes this particular problem that they see as the primary problem in their life, you can, there's just some more signal in there instead of just the scatterbrained, like it fixes this, things they don't understand. People are always constantly, they start the Bitcoin conversation by going through the history of money, which I do find interesting. I was an economics guy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
most people do not want to hear the long, boring history of money and listen to you lecture them and tell them that what they thought is money is wrong. Their definition is wrong. Yours is right. And you're going to go, you're going to start like Putin in the 1800s or the 800s and go all the way to present day. They're tuned out long before that.
But it's also, you're not going to get somebody from zero to 100 in an hour anyway.
So they have to do it themselves.
They have to do it themselves.
Yeah.
But create a positive touch point. Mm-hmm. Create like a memory in their brains. Like, oh yeah, that guy that I was talking to about Bitcoin. Like, oh yeah, he seemed cool. Like, he seemed to get it. You know? Oh, maybe there is something to this.
Right.
And then they're going to leave and they're not going to think about Bitcoin for another 2 weeks, 2 years, whatever it is. And then they'll have another touch point and then another one. And then eventually they'll get it.
Right.
And if you're lucky, and if you're really lucky, you'll somehow meet this person again. You know, for you guys, you're out here doing a podcast. So maybe people will message you in 2 years from now and be like, oh guys, like I listened to your podcast and it really helped me out through my journey and stuff. Right. That's best case scenario. But most of the time, just somebody that you're talking to on the street or at a meetup or whatever, you're going to leave them with that touch point and they're going to go off into their life and you're never going to see them again.
Yeah, for sure. What is a positive touch point that you've had recently to learn more about Bitcoin that has kind of sent you down a new narrative or a new rabbit hole about how you understand Bitcoin and what it fixes that you didn't necessarily realize until, you know, when your first year in or so? Like you said, you started with energy and economics, but what's another thing that you're like, oh, wow, it fixes this as well?
Well, even the stuff that Mike was talking about like meetups are good Bitcoin meetups are places where men get together and talk and make each other stronger. Steel sharpens steel, right?
Right.
Like that's a touch point that requires some thinking on that, right? My God. And you guys, speaking of you guys, your show, you guys have been on a bit of a run. You've had some really good shows over the past couple of months.
Thank you.
You know, like your interview with Ben Justman, I thought was like one of the best interviews. No, in a Bitcoin.
I love Ben.
I love him too. I've listened to him on many of his many podcasts, and I thought the one he did with you guys was the best one. And I've sent that one to a bunch of people, and that was and a lot of the same thing that Mike was talking about. That was very much an interview about men growing into something and being passionate about something and pouring their energy into something.
Right.
It wasn't a Bitcoin interview.
Right.
So that was a very positive touch point for me about thinking about my passions and about making the world better and about legacy. Right. That was a fantastic interview. So that's one. You had a couple of good interviews with Eric V.
Oh, yeah, of course.
With Eric.
Love Eric.
Stacks. Like what a force of nature that guy is. Right. Like this guy.
I mean, this, you know, a couple of years, we're going to be talking about this guy. It's like maybe not sailor level, but this guy's going to be famous, I think. This guy's...
What you kind of said reminds me back to another conversation I really enjoyed with Tomek from Poland, from the European Bitcoiners, about what is a Bitcoin film. And Bitcoin's kind of getting to this level in culture and media and art where it's, we need better media. We need better art and films and things to kind of explain those values, right? And it's, everybody's so focused on, I can't remember the term for the film, and of course Mike is not able to answer, but where the movie like explains every little detail explicitly to you, and you miss out on all this other value, all these other themes and meanings, and you can really just capture.
It's called exposition.
Exposition, yes, and you can convey and portray same. Values are the same meaning without explaining it that way. You can just find different layers of it.
I had the same conversation a couple of weeks ago with Julian. You know Julian Figueroa, Kinetic Finance?
Yeah. Well, I know who he is. I don't know him personally.
Yeah, you should get him on the show. Like, I'll ask him to come on.
For sure.
He's fantastic. So he's an audiovisual guy. Like, he's like a media guy, audiovisual. And that's what he says all the time. Like, we have enough podcasters, but we need more art. We need more Bitcoin creation. We need more movies, more films, more documentaries.
More memes.
We need more memes, yeah. To really penetrate the social layer, right? The broader social layer. Like, I think we're good. Like, the Bitcoin social layer is very strong. Like, we create good content for each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We do a great job of that.
Got to expand the audience.
But we're not doing a great job of creating great stuff for, you know, new people. And I mean, I'm, you know, Julian, I consider a friend. So like maybe I'm biased, but I think he's the best in the business about creating. He does short little things for TikTok and for Instagram that kind of catch the normies, you know?
Right.
Where they're just easy on the eyes. They're kind of fun. But we need more of that.
It's just a bunch. TikTok could be a negative, but it can also be a great way to give people a lot of short, positive touch points with Bitcoin.
Short touch points, but it's not just TikTok. Maybe it's T-shirts, and there are plenty of T-shirts like Corey that does a Hodler's Official. You know, like you see his baseball sweaters showing up all over the place, the baseball jersey, things like that. What's the energy drink? Sovereign Energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do the energy drink. They were at Pacific Bitcoin.
Is that where it is? Is that what they are? Sovereign.
Yeah, it's Sovereign Energy drinks.
Yes. Shit like that, right? We need more of that type of stuff.
Agreed.
Yeah, the crossover between this world and the other world. Sure.
Yeah, to create more positive touch points, right?
Yeah, that's what we had that conversation with Gabe from No Waste BTC Science. He's creating these physical representations of things we're normally seeing only in the digital realm. We think of them as, which are, they are abstract digital content. But you see a sign, it's a different, it brings that into your reality differently.
That was another one of the interviews that I wanted to mention to you guys that I really, really enjoyed. Like that one was,
I really like talking to him as well.
That was one of my favorites. Yeah, you guys have done like five or six of in the past, since Christmas.
Like really towards the end of December, you guys kind of hit it in another gear. I've been a fan of your show for a long time. You know that. I've been interacting with you guys now for a couple of years now. But you've really stepped it up to another level the past couple of months.
I think we finally figured out
what
the show is and what the experience is. You know, when we just started this, it was just trying to, did people want to listen to us? Do we have anything interesting to say? And then you start to get positive feedback and you follow that positive feedback. And so hopefully it keeps getting better. I hope you guys are enjoying it and other people are enjoying it as much as you are. We enjoy having conversations with all these people and people like you. It's always interesting, and you always have a different perspective to share.
I kind of hope we never figure it out.
Never figure it out permanently. It'll always evolve.
I kind of hope we just keep on iterating and doing all kinds of
hopefully the
weird shit
changes. The world keeps changing in a positive direction. We have new ways of understanding what's happening, and we can talk about it, help other people make sense of it as well.
It's a show called High Hash Rate. It's a Bitcoin weed podcast. And honestly, most of your best shows don't really talk about weed and don't really talk about Bitcoin.
Well, that's what I said. What's a Bitcoin podcast? You don't even have to talk about Bitcoin.
It's a good question. What is a Bitcoin podcast?
Yeah. What is a Bitcoin film? What is a Bitcoin podcast? That's mm-hmm. good. What is, yeah, you could ask that question. What is a Bitcoin meetup?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because maybe it's hard to get people to come to a Bitcoin meetup because they have biases or prejudices. They think it's nerdy or they think it's weird or they think it's libertarian. So don't call it a Bitcoin meetup.
Positive touch points everywhere, right? Every opportunity is a Bitcoin meetup, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go to Starbucks and you're just waiting in line to get your latte. That's a Bitcoin meetup. You just, you know, start talking to the person next to you.
Well said.
What's a Bitcoin miner? Yeah, you could go down this rabbit hole forever. Awesome, man. It's getting pretty late, so
we didn't even talk about Trailer Park Boys. Like barely, we mentioned it barely.
What's your favorite season? About...
I don't know.
Anyone except the one where they did the train.
Okay, yeah. Season 6 or 7.
Patrick Swayze's train. That was
I didn't
not...
like that one, and I didn't like the season with Tom Arnold and like Snoop Dogg and like Snoop all like Dogg. the celebrities that got in there because they thought it was going to be the last season. I always skipped that one.
Yeah, that one wasn't awesome either. Did you watch the animated one?
No,
I didn't see that.
It wasn't bad.
Maybe I'll check that one out.
It's all well, world.
The all-time greatest one, though, was the Christmas...
Oh, yeah.
Christmas special. Like, that was just unbelievable.
J-Rock, when J-Rock becomes J-Rock.
Yeah. So who's... Now, you mentioned before, like, you know, for the people listening, you guys were on the Canadian Bitcoin podcast earlier this evening, and mm-hmm. I listened to it. Mm-hmm. So, like...
That's right, we were.
Like I was saying to Mike before, it's like, it's been a high hash rate type of evening for me. And Len asked you about who is the best character, and Dan, you said that it's Ricky, and like I 100% disagree with you.
Well, he didn't. Right, who do you think it is?
It's Bubbles, and it's not even close.
But why?
Because Bubbles is the real one, man. Bubbles understands proof of work. Ricky would be a shit corner.
Yeah, that's true.
Ricky would be a shit corner.
But he would also be like the kingpin of some sort of like hillbillier version of Silk Road, like running like his hydro plants and
what's great about Ricky is he sounds like an idiot until he starts talking about dope, and then all of a sudden it's just like the autism just like
exactly it's a genius. Trailer Park Boys is a show about autism. When you find that just that weird little thing that just pushes you, that does it for you, it can change your life if you follow it. If it's a positive thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The all time greatest line in the Trailer Park Boys is like Jim Leahy gets in Ricky's face and says, "Ricky, I've got something you'll never have.
My grade 10.
It's the greatest line.
That is the greatest. That's one of the greatest lines. One of my favorites is just the there's a couple of them. One of them is the Cyrus. I think it's from season one. He's like, "Got my 9mm safety always off."
9mm safety always off.
It may have been the first episode.
Yeah,
it might be the absolute first episode.
So one of my things I like about Bubbles is the comments he makes, like when Phil Collins like burps on him, he's like, "I got mackerel juice on me."
I wanted to bring up Phil Collins. I was saying to Len earlier, it's like Phil Collins. Do you guys watch The Wire?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, you didn't. You got to watch The Wire and Trailer Park Boys now. So
I have
The Wire,
to catch up on.
You got, if you're going to make films, you got to watch the two best television shows from each country on North America.
So everybody that's watched The Wire knows that Omar is the best character.
Yeah,
and that's fine. Like, but no one really said like who's like the character that stole every scene that he was in, and the answer to that is Slim Charles.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted Slim Charles to, you know.
Yeah,
Slim he had a great ending, so I was happy about that.
Slim Charles steals every single scene he's in.
Part of that is the voice. That voice helps him a lot. And that's what I tell Mike.
He's just cool. He's just super cool.
Part of High Hash Rate's success is we just lucked out and got a badass name. People hear High Hash Rate. That's got to be good.
So who wins the Trailer Park Boys Slim Charles Award? As the B character, the C character who's not in every show, but every time he's in it, steals the scene?
Phil.
Can I answer this?
Collins. Gotta be
what
Phil
about
Collins.
Mike Ehrmantraut?
Who?
Mike Ehrmantraut.
Oh, from Breaking Bad?
And Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Same sort of deal.
Yeah, the stuff we're talking about is just a different echelon, though. But yeah,
Breaking
he's
that's good, though. Breaking Bad's good.
No,
good.
You're right.
Really good. When he was in Breaking Bad, he was in every scene. He stole every scene that he was in, and that's why they gave him a show. Yes. Slim Charles is the same way, and Phil Collins in Trailer Park Boys.
Who is it for Sopranos? Who steals the scene? Who's kind of like a side character in Sopranos? It's got to be somebody. I'm trying to think.
Well, Polly, but Polly's not really a side character, right? Like, Polly's too important to be a side character.
Oh, obviously. The answer is Tony's mom.
I wasn't a fan, but like, I can admit greatness, right?
That character was just so evil to the core. Yeah. It was like such a deep character. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I get it. Definitely not a likable one.
Well, dudes.
Yeah, man. Before we go. Yeah, what's...
Do you have any place
where people can find you or want to get out information about Ottawa Meetup or anything like Canadian Bitcoin Conference? Any of your stuff going on there?
Yeah, go to the Canadian Bitcoin Conference. I'll be there. It's in Montreal. It's going to be great. Follow me on Twitter, The Ruler's Broken. Also, Capital Bitcoiners, that's where the meetup is. And to anybody listening, look, guys, if you've made it this far, like we're over an hour in, go to a Bitcoin meetup. Like if you can listen to
start one, right?
Go to a Bitcoin meetup and start one. Because this is great. Listening to podcasts is awesome. That's how I got into Bitcoin. And I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for guys like you who had the balls to like start podcasts. But it's real life. You gotta show up. And not everybody can afford to go to a conference. I know there's one going on right now in Madeira, and I'd love to be there, but I just can't.
God, I want to go there so bad.
Yeah,
I wish I knew. I didn't even know about it till like a month ago. I'm like, I don't have time to go to this.
And it's expensive, and I get it. You know.
Yeah.
But it's not expensive to go to a local meetup and order a Pepsi, or
The one city in Canada that is like, I would say maybe like the sister city or the brother city to where I live in Omaha is Manitoba. So if there's anybody listening from the Manitoba Bitcoin meetup, I'd love to talk to you because I feel like you are probably the Canadian version of me.
I actually am in contact. I think his name is Craig.
Of course. Craig from the Manitoba Bitcoin meetup.
No, I think he's like really into mining. I haven't talked to him one-on-one, but I think he's like a real one, dude. Like, I think he's like, no joke.
All right, Craig from the Manitoba Bitcoin meetup, we're gonna get you on somehow.
Yeah, for sure.
You have a virtual meetup as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do the virtual meetups on Thursday. That's through your sister brother cousin podcast, High Hash Rate. So Fundamentals.
Rock Paper Bitcoin.
Yeah, Business Cat and Fundamentals. Talk to Fundamentals about that. I don't know if it's an invite only thing, but he said on his podcast that message him if you're interested in this virtual meetup on Thursday nights, and he'll hook you up.
Interesting. He's always saying he goes to bed early. Now he's got these secret nighttime meetups.
No, we're usually done around 9. It goes from 7 to 9.
Cool. Well, that sounds awesome. Hey, man, we'll get you back on. We'll do these quarterly because these are always really fun. I like Uber chats.
The quarterly Canadian.
There you go.
Quarterly Canadian.
Yeah, and we'll get Len on. Let's do a four-way. We'll get Len on.
That's good, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
we got to get Joey on, too.
Yeah, get Joey. Get Joey on. Those guys have, like, become friends in real life for me.
We got to try to get Francis on, too, from Bull.
Just got to get all them Canadians on.
Yeah.
Maddox is coming, too.
Haven't you had Maddox on already?
Yeah.
I remember that one. That was, like, one of your first ones.
Actually,
that's kind of more recent,
yeah.
More recent, yeah. See, I found your podcast not super late, but probably around episode 50 or so.
Okay. 30,
40, 50. So, like, I haven't listened to them all in order.
Most of the ones in the beginning are not that good, so don't even bother.
Well, they're pretty good. Like, some of the ones, you did an Eric Kaysen one super early.
Yeah, that's true. That was a good one.
You did one with CK Snipes. That was really good.
The Breedlove one was good too. Yeah, for sure.
But see, I'm a real fan. Like, I actually did listen. I probably listened to 80% of your shows. Oh, thanks, Brewer.
Hell yeah, man. Thanks. Start one of your off.
Yeah, that's true. All right, dudes. We'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate Podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!